Welcome to the podcast with a K. I'm Christian Corley, and in this week's show, we're going to be remembering the late, great Terence Dicks, who passed away on August the 29th at the age of 84. Joining me is Gareth Cavanagh.
We should probably start by talking about Terence Dicks then, shouldn't we? Because the grandfather of Doctor Who, sadly, passed away a few weeks ago.
Mighty Oak. Yeah, you must have met him.
I did meet him, yeah. I spoke to him on the phone, thanks to you. And I also met him at one of your Fab Cafes events.
Yes, we did an audience with. I did, yeah. So many Terence, I forgot. What did you speak to him on the phone about? I can't remember arranging that, but
God almighty. It was something to do with, I don't know. There was a reason for it, and it was quite a good reason. It might have been...
I'm sorry, Christian, I can't remember a thing about this. You must remember it was 87 years ago.
Yeah, there was a bit of that. The other thing is was, he seemed to be a little troubled by using the phone in terms of hearing what I was saying. And my better phone ear is the best of two not great phone ears. Right. So there's quite a bit of... I think you can see where this is going. Of communication problems for the duration of this 10-minute phone call. A lot of repetition of the same question. I cannot remember why we were speaking. But yeah.
You lost your keys. Oh, dear. Yeah, he was good fun. So you can't remember why you called him, but you did.
No, I can't. No, it was just something to do with... I'm thinking it was something to do with the video game fanzine, but I don't know why it would have been that other than...
Had he written text for an adventure game?
He might have done, but I don't think he did. So that's why I don't know why. There must have been a reason for it, but it's just not coming to me at the moment. Oh, well, I ran that website for a long time, so...
Terence would have hated video games. He would have been.
Oh, yeah. That's why I don't think it was that, because I don't think he was that involved with it. The only game that I can think of that he would have been involved with, he wasn't involved with, it was Gary Russell who did that.
Gary was in touch with him, but...
Yeah, that was Destiny of the Doctors. I don't know why I was speaking to him at all.
You just made up an excuse to ring Terence, didn't you?
I certainly did not, because I hate ringing people.
Anyway, so we can't remember why you rang him, but you rang him. That's nice.
Yeah, pretty much it. Yeah. And then I spoke to him at the Fab Cafe thing that you had. Which is really, really good.
It was a good event, that. I had him at a couple of events, and he was a rum old cove, as we say. And the first event, I remember I invited him, because, yeah, he had a wonderful email, blandrobin@somethingsomething.com. I mean, I don't know why I'm hiding it, because he's not exactly going to be replying to anything now. But I remember the minute I saw that was his email, I liked that. I thought, yeah, I like that. There's a man who's actually quite proud of his work on the fly. And we had done, back at the last, our second VaughtCon was NovelCon. And he couldn't come to that. He was doing something else. And then when we did our third one, WriterCon, you know, I was trying to theme things back then. I quickly ran out of themes of things I could afford. I rang him up and I said, well, we're doing a convention. You know, we did one with the novels. Well, why didn't you invite me to the novel one? I said, I did. Oh, and why didn't I come? You said you were busy. Oh, well, I suppose I better come to yours then. So he came to ours. And the thing with Terence is he would get very anxious about his travel arrangements. He'd have to book and book and take it. And then he said, well, when's your event on? I said, well, it's on 12 till 5. Fine. I'll get there before midday, but I must be gone before 2:30. Okay, right, that's fine. So I book all the tickets. Terence comes on at about, you know, 1 o'clock, does a great talk with John Cooper. I think we asked him his five favourites about Who, and we had a clip from each. I can't remember what the clips were, truth be told, except for he did a brilliant... He picked a master scene from The Five Doctors, which he'd written, which he just said he picked because it was Dead Man's Shoes, because he said he always thought it was impossible to follow Roger Delgado in his footsteps, but he thought that Ainley in that scene was the best he'd ever seen him as the Master. It's the one, you know, Chance Castellan, Chancellor Flavia, and all that. And you watch it, and Ainley pretty much doing it as Delgado, but actually the whole of the Five Doctors, which is why it's a nice scene. So he gave that, and he rather unfavourably compared JNT to Hitler. the panel. No, with the proviso, he said, but let's be frank, Hitler did love dogs. And then he sort of finished at 10 to 2, and I thought, right, well, we'll have to get Terence on in his taxi. So then Terence goes into the snug, and we cook him a bowl of his, we cooked for the special that day, the Shaboggan stew from the Doctor Who cookbook. We were ahead of the time, kid. We had that first. So we lovingly cooked him his stew, which is very reasonable. Got him a pint, and he sat down, and this queue suddenly started forming. Because I don't know if you remember the early last event, the vault event, we never did signings. It was kind of a feature of our thing. The guests would talk to people in the bar, but we never did. And suddenly this queue of 30 people formed with people bringing their precious target things to sign, including one cheeky swine who had 25 all piled up in his Asda carrier bag. I remember that. Anyway, so I got to the front of the queue, and I didn't have to queue. I said, Terence, you know, we're going to have to go. Your train's in 25 minutes. And he goes, which idiot booked me a train that early? Come on. And I thought, well, you did, Terence. And I went, shall I book you a late train, Terence? First class, I would add. And he goes, yes, I think you better have. And looked at me with his stern look and got back, yes, and who is this mate? And I thought, as I just saw £100 just evaporate in the smoke in front of my eyes. And I went, right, okay, okay, we'll get another train. And actually, you can see the line of everyone was happy, including this pig with his 25 novels. And then he had another pint, and then we got him on the, and it, right, I better go now. And I thought, yeah, okay. So we packed him off. But that was Terence for you, you know, a man of contradictions. When we had him at Fab Cafe, the one you remember.
I remember that one as well. Now you've
he didn't take. Well, yeah. So he turned up he turned up a bit late and really grumpy, and he didn't want to walk. Where is it? That's miles and miles. No, we'll get it. A horse is going. So we got him in a cab, and we got there. I can't do anything until I've got a drink. So get him a pint and a wheel. And I'm looking at the clock, thinking, God. Now this time, I'd booked him on a 5:30 train, and because I knew he's anxious about his train, I said, I booked us in the Italian restaurant that's next to Piccadilly Station. And I went, so we got through it, and he went, that was lovely. I really enjoyed it. So, great. And I said, right, well, we've got to get you off your train. I know you're always anxious about your train. So, yes. So I said, so I've got us booked in for an Italian. He looked at me and he goes, well, Chinese. And I went, no, Terence, Italian. No, Chinese. I eat Chinese food every day. And I was like, well, yes, but there isn't a Chinese thing in Piccadilly. And he goes, up here, that will do. And above Fab Cafe was an all-you-can-eat Chinese restaurant. And up he goes. So I thought, oh, well. And so he wanders round, and he relaxed then again. He goes, Gareth, you must understand, I've eaten Chinese food every day for the past 20 years. It is the finest food in the world. And then he's with his bowl soup. Very good soup. Good soup. And then he relaxed again. And then we let a load of the guys who were there come with us. So people like Paul Cook and Will Phantom. Lots of people came. And we all sat at the long table and ate Chinese food. I think I got the tab for everyone. And again, I thought, bloody hell, he's done it to me again. But I could see how happy everyone was, so I thought, well, do you know what? Let's just enjoy it. And I think that was, did I see him again? We'd correspond a bit, and I'd ring him up occasionally. I tried ever so hard to get the rights to some of his stuff for comic. And Terence was up for it, and I've got emails from him when he says, yes, that sounds reasonable. Because I wanted the Think Tank guys from Robot, and I really wanted the Warlord, and I quite wanted Great Vampires. And his agent blocked it. His agents went, no, Terence doesn't really understand how these things work. No, we can't do any deals that aren't BBC sanctioned. So I said, so this Beast of Fang Rock book didn't exist, did it? And they went, well, yes, but we shouldn't have done that, sorry. No. And that was it. So that was the last I heard of Terence. He, I'd email him and I'd call him every now and again. But I think his health had been going downhill for a while. I think he'd had a little stroke last year, and he'd obviously bounced back from that. But we were lucky to have him for so long. I mean, what was he, 85 when he went? 86?
Yeah. 84.
There you go. I'm not that old. So for a man who'd lived on Chinese food for the best part of 30 years every day and knew how to enjoy himself, Terence was indeed a gift. We should be very grateful to him. He certainly knew how to hold a room. And I'll miss him. And the funny thing is, the day before he went, I remember thinking to myself, let's drop Terence the line. I think he'd love Videodicy. And we could do something nice. And of course, that will now never be. But privileged to have done a couple of really interesting events with him.
Yeah, they certainly were. I think I recorded one of them on an audio device, but I'm not sure what happened to that. He's probably, Terence Dix, he certainly has pride of place among Doctor Who writers as having perhaps the biggest influence over the show, isn't he?
He does. And, you know, he was very proud of this. I remember saying to him, you know, and we don't give him credit for how good he was at that. I remember saying to him, you know, Terence, you know, nobody bangs together a four-episode plot like you. You know, you really know how to make that machine tick, how to purr, how to make it peak. You've got that down pat. And he goes, and the dialogue and the characters. Come on, Gareth. That was pretty good. I went, oh, yes, well, of course you know the characters. Yes. I think he'd get a bit nettled sometimes that he was seen as the nuts and bolts man and didn't always get the credit for some of his superb dialogue and character. So I think that's fair. You know, he's on his heights are perhaps not as great as say Bob Holmes, but Bob Holmes could always turn out a stinker as well. You know, he's far more consistent than Bob. And, you know, Bob has the benefit of having Terence to fix his stuff, whereas Terence pretty much has to do it on his own, apart from Fang Roth. Which, oddly enough, is Terence's best piece, I would say, arguably.
Yeah, that's a fair point. The other thing as well is, in terms of the novelizations, there's kind of two schools on reading a book, isn't there? It's like, if you're reading a book and, you know, it's like a literary experience and it feels like you're reading something amazing, then there's the other type of book, which is like, you don't know you've read it because you've got through it so quickly and enjoyed, you know, it's like the literal page turner. And Terence Dix could definitely turn a Doctor Who story. In fact, not even just like a Doctor Who story they've been on there, because his later New Adventures and BBC Books original novels, were just as page turnery. You know, you're picking up a target novel, which might take you, I don't know, a couple of hours to read if it was by Ian Martin. You could have got through it in maybe 90 minutes. If Terence has written it, because it's just such, everything is there, everything is clear, there's the familiarity, his familiarity with what he's writing about, it's so clear.
Confidence. I mean, you know, I mean, his ultimate task, his ultimate, you know, brilliant achievement is getting the War Games down to something like 109 pages. Mm. I mean, the sheer efficiency of that novel, and yet you miss nothing. I don't think there's anything missing. It does make you realise there's an awful lot of running around in the middle bit of, of the War Games. But
yeah,
he's crisp, he's efficient, but he also fixes things. And there are moments where he actually transcends the original material. So I always think of Image of the Fendal, which is it's a slender Terence volume. There's no getting around it. It's another one of his 109 pages, and yet he has scenes in there. You know, he has a prologue again, which he always does brilliantly. He does it in the in Underworld. He does it in Image of the Fendal. But there's the scene where Fendelman twigs that actually he's been part of the grand plan. You know, mankind has been used. And having read Terence's book first, although I have vague memories of watching Image of Fendal as a kid, I don't remember. It's a very detailed piece, early adult piece. And there's a scene in the book which is worth digging out and reading, because I think there's the moment of his sort of realization and collapse, and the way he screams at Max Stahl and Stahl turns the gun on him and kills him, it's so much better in the book. And I think that is what Terence is able to do. He's also able to fix little niggles and inconsistencies in plot every now and again. But he does it seamlessly, not in a look-I'm-so-clever way, just almost in Terence script editor mode, tightening, tweaking, shortening, lengthening, great use of prologues and codas to set the scene. And there's a richness to his work, which I think you don't always appreciate at the time, but has, I think, cemented the reputation of some of those stories in a way that perhaps the on-screen presentation didn't. So, yeah, good old Tell, the master.
There's a nice list here on Wikipedia, and this, I don't think this is everything, but it gives you an idea, if you're unfamiliar with perhaps Terence's impact and position in Doctor Who, his influence on everything. A list of additions to the programme's mythology from when he joined as script editor onwards. The development of the Time Lords and their society. The name Gallifrey, which is apparently augmented from Robert Holmes' suggestion of Galfrey. The creation of Liz Shaw, Joe Grant and Sarah Jane Smith. The term regeneration. Mm-hmm. The Sontarans.
Yep. Rejuvenation.
Dematerialization circuit. The concept that the TARDIS is indestructible, that the TARDIS can be remote controlled, that it has a telepathic circuit, that it might be sentient, which has certainly come a long way these days. The Blinovich limitation effect from Day of the Daleks. Multi-Doctor stories.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of that is basically the show as we know it today.
No, Terence is really big gift. I mean, is I suppose, the Time Lord, regeneration, codifying the Doctor's past and his present, you know, giving us an understanding, moving him from a mysterious Time Lord. I suppose some people have regretted. There are people who don't like the addition of the Time Lord, because they think it takes away the mystery. I don't. Doctor Who was in a terrible mess as well in 1969. You know, audiences were on the slide. It had had a pretty absentee landlord in Derek Sherwin. And Peter Bryant, arguably. So Terence, as junior script editor, was quietly steering the ship in many ways. And to suddenly have a six-parter and a four-parter fall through and go, right, good news, guys, you've got to write this. And not just come up with anything, but come up with something that's not just a quality piece of drama, but then completely create the mythos. And let's face it, would have been a satisfying end for Doctor Who had it ended in 1969, because the mystery of the Doctor would have been revealed, but he would have generously left it with a jumping off point, you know, with him going into a regeneration but without showing the face, which means that it could have come back 3 years later or 5 years later or 10 years later, and it still continued on its way. He's a clever man. I suppose his other great gift is when he finally gets his hands with Barry on the Pertwee era proper, with Terror of the Autons, and sets up, you know, Unit as we understand it, the Master, a slightly more rounded Pertwee, Joe Grant. He invents modern Doctor Who at that point. That pretty much gives you the shape of that show for 5 years, and even Hinchcliffe doesn't deviate too far from it. I think it's pretty close to what you then get for quite a way. So it's an incredible achievement. incredible achievement. And he gets the five doctors to work, which no one else could.
Yeah. And a kind of a very surprising book for its time and influential, The Making of Doctor Who with Mark Hulk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, alongside Max writing the TV, seminal text. Yeah, that's true. And it gave you a sense that, much like Doctor Who magazine would do in later years, that you could work on this show. As you know, when I was a kid, you either were an actor or a cameraman. It's only when you start reading these things do you realise that, yeah, there's a lot more to a production than a cameraman and a bloody actor. There's writers, there's directors, there's producers, there's production unit managers, there's
floor runners,
key grips. There's so that I think he helped persuade a lot, help people understand that there was a way in to TV, that there was more to than just being the bloke in the frilly shirt and the velvet jacket. There was a whole team of people behind this. And I think Terrence, in that sense, and certainly for a lot of writers, he teaches them how to structure, how to write. He codifies what Doctor Who is. I suppose he's never cruel, never cowardly. He's arguably better than it's obviously. I think it's more dramatic than Stephen Moffat's Be Kind, because that's always felt a bit mealy mouthed to me. Be kind, you know, never cruel or cowardly. Still leaves room for the Doctor to be brave and bold and maddening and desperate, but never cruel or cowardly. I suppose those are quite good catchwords. It's a good thumbnail sketch of the Doctor as we'll ever get. So yeah, Terrence, what a guy.
I understand that there is a short story of Terrence Dicks that's due to be published in October. Part of the Target storybook called Save Yourself.
What a lovely coda. I don't think anyone knows anything about it, but it's a nice way to bow out, isn't it? Because Terrence has then been active in Doctor Who for, what, 50 years? More? 52 years. A record that will never be beaten.
Probably.
I don't think it can be. I don't think anyone else has been able to ever really adapt to stay true to what they understand Doctor Who is and yet continue to write across media across so many decades. But I don't think it's possible. So he's a true one-off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who love Chinese food?
Who love Chinese food?
Begrudging that.
Terrence Dicks. The grandfather of Doctor Who. May he rest in peace. I don't... What would you... I mean, if you were going to say, oh, Terrence has passed away, I need to watch something or read something to celebrate his influence on Doctor Who, what would be your first choice?
Well, quite bizarrely, the day I read he'd gone was the day that the Target novelisation of Bob Baker's Underworld arrived.
Ah.
So that's got lots going for it, but the main thing Underworld's got going for it, because I remember being absolutely thrilled and entranced by that as a kid. You know, Terrence introduced many of us to the concept of the junior library. He also taught us that all good things were to be found under D in the children's library next to Follyfoot, which was terrible. But if you found the Follyfoot books, then you generally found that whatever Terrence Dick, Doctor Who's one they were. And I remember being entranced by Underworld, Invisible Enemy, Planet of the Daleks, and all of that sort of late, that, you know, the Planet of Evil, they're all great. But I have to say, purely for the magnificent 4-page prequel, which gives you a sense of the rise and fall of Mignot, beautifully sketched out, which he doesn't have to do, you know, because clearly he could just go straight into adapting Bob's scripts, which are tight and crisp and literary and better than we saw realized on the screen, apart from Alan Lake's Herrick, which is a magnificent performance. He doesn't have to do that, but he does it. We just get a nice little coda of the Doctor in his smock, painting the console room aquamarine, which is the one reason why I've always wanted to have a room in aquamarine, and I don't know why until now. But yeah, I would go with Doctor Who and Underworld. But any of those, any of those mid-70s, late-70s Terrences are a treat.
Yeah, I really do like Underworld. I know it doesn't hold together particularly well, but the actual, what they were trying to achieve in front of the camera leaves me with nothing but admiration for them.
Well, do you know what? I think Russell T. Davies did a brilliant production notes on Underworld, gosh, probably 15 years ago. And he boils down everything that's great about it, and he boils down the problems with it. And virtually all the problems are down to production and casting. God, we've gone a bit sideways here, but you know, the villains, the Seers, the design of their helmets. I think Russell says the problem is the design, the way he's done the eyes. It's given them like a little comedy nose, and the minute you notice the comedy nose, you can't see anything else, and that's true. Mm. So that's the problem. And I think the casting is patchy. Let's be honest. You've got Alan Lake as Herrick, who's fantastic. He's like a poor man's Oliver Reed, but there is no shame in being a poor man's Oliver Reed. But then you've got whoever plays Jackson is dreadful, very beige, no drama. Whoever plays Ida is the slave. I think he's pretty poor from memory. So it's very beigely. It needed a sharper cast. And in particular, the Minion crew as written are fantastic. They're a combination of zealots and absolutely worn out people at the end of their lives who are just aching to die. And I think there's an early scene where the woman, Tala, who's on the crew, tries to go beyond her lifespan so she isn't brought back. And they twig what she's doing. They stick her in the regeneration chamber and bring her back. And they said, oh, you know, we know what you're up to. That is an om, you know. And the idea of these people who've now lived and regenerated 1,000 times and are on this endless quest, and they've almost forgotten why they're doing it. It deserves a much better cast than they got. It's also directed by Norman Stewart, who, aside from making a really good fist at those CSO scenes in the cave, is pretty dull. You know, nobody really talked about this or Power of Crawl with any great fondness. And again, Power of Crawl is very beigely cast. So yeah, you've got a director who doesn't seem to be able to cast. You've got a producer that's lost control of budget at the time. That's why, you know, that's why you've got the cave scenes arrive, because they haven't got the money to go on location all of a sudden. And yet, inside all of this, there's great stuff. There's absolutely great stuff and quality, and there are gems within the cast. So for Terrence to take this rich material and then just give it a light 10% polish makes it a highlight. So yeah, that's my recommendation, Underworld.
Okay, well, mine was going to be a particular title, and then it dawned on me, this may tickle you, I remembered why I called Terrence Dicks on the Phone.
Oh, cool. Now I'm intrigued.
Now, this was, I believe, for an article either in Uncast Urbis, or it might have been something I was pitching. I'm not sure. But it was basically about conspiracy theories. And one of the, in the Virgin and BBC books, Terrence had devised characters called the Players, who were manipulating Earth politics.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I called him. That's what I was speaking to him about.
Which is Troughton and Series 6B, isn't it? Which again,
yeah, it starts off with that, and then it spins out that, and comes to several of the later Doctors. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, because there's a lot of RTD stuff that's kind of grounded in popular conspiracy theories. For instance, the Slitheen being aliens pretending to be humans, which obviously comes back years.
David, isn't it? And that's right. And there's the UFO spotter guy in the first episode.
Yeah.
I thought it was a mistake killing off Mark Benson's character. what's his name again? Clive.
Is Clive. It? He's not dead now, is he? He's been paralleled, hasn't he, into Pete's world on Big Finish.
Yeah. Okay. In the telecarnation, he's definitely dead.
Yeah.
In Canon Prime, he's gone.
Canon Prime sounds like a transformer who converts into a weapon. Yeah. there's you know, we talk about Doctor Who a lot.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You asked him about the players.
Yeah, I was basically asking him about the players, yeah. And I honestly can't remember what his response was, but it was something along the lines of he completely made them up. So
that was
good. But no, yeah, we've talked largely about Doctor Who, but obviously, I say obviously, because you might not know this, he did loads of work that wasn't Doctor Who. I mean, you know this, obviously, the listener may not. So he worked on the Avengers throughout its original run.
I showed him a clip of his Avengers at the Fab Cafe, and it was the only clip I could find. It was a really boring clip at the at an auction. He said, "Why on earth have you picked such a terrible clip?" This is in front of everyone. Well, thank you, Terrence. I'm the only one I could find on YouTube. Well, bloody hell. He was a man who liked to be known for writing thrilling things.
Yeah. Moonbase 3.
Yeah, I am aware that he did an Avengers. Moonbase 3 I've never seen, although in his obituary stuff, I did see pictures of Ralph Bates in spacesuits and suddenly remembered, oh, I could do with seeing that. But I've never got around to it.
One episode he wrote with Barry Letts. He wrote an episode of Space 1999, The Lambda Factor. And
I remember that well. Yeah. I wrote a script, I sent it off, they paid me loads of cash, and I never heard from them again. And he more or less said he turned on ITV and it was on.
He also wrote some
the money protection.
He also wrote some kind of Doctor Who fan film things, didn't he, as well? There's The Shakedown, which is probably the most well known, which is the fan produced movie which takes place in the middle of a novel that Terrence also wrote for Virgin.
Well, I think the film came first, and then Terrence expanded it in his novel.
Yeah, yeah. So that's it's obviously the film has no Doctor in it or anything.
Yeah, it's very ambitious for the time. It's a sort of it's the crew of a space yacht, and it's mostly sort of all of the people in it have been in Doctor Who one way or another, or Blake Seven. It's got pretty good production values. You know, Shakedown was the great hope for fandom at the time because there was nothing on telly. And I think DWB were part of it, and Ian Levine was part of it. There was, you know, so it had a bit of a budget and nicely redesigned Sontarans. I'd forgotten Terrence wrote the script. Isn't that terrible?
Mm. Well, do you know what? There's a load of scripts I didn't know he wrote that I've watched and enjoyed, and that a lot of people of our age group would have done. The classic serials, I thought he was only involved with the classic series as executive producer for a short time. But he wrote The Hound of the Baskervilles, the Tom Baker one. Among many others, Jane Eyre, Bojess, which I remember watching, Pickwick Papers, the excellent Oliver Twist, which was like the best version of Oliver Twist to be on TV, with Eric Porter as Fagin. That was a really good show. There's Lizette Anthony was in it as well. There's David Copperfield, Diary of Anne Frank, those old classic series things that the BBC used to do on a Sunday afternoon.
Pretty proud of
those. Rightly so.
But he knew he was only going to be remembered for Doctor Who in a huge way, and I think he was... Like a lot of people, it takes them a long time to get used to the fact that when they go, all they're going to be remembered for is Doctor Who. I can tell you it nettles a lot of them. But never had that problem. You know, he was delighted to be remembered, and actually not just remembered, but celebrated. And a rich and fantastic career.
Absolutely. Terran Dix, who died back on August the 29th at the age of 84.
He's gone, but he's an immortal as well.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to be watching a Terrence Dix piece of Doctor Who long after Dennis Potter is forgotten. Long after all of these greats are forgotten. Terrence
Dix. And reading the books.
People will be reading his books. People will be watching and enjoying Terrence's stuff for as long as people have eyes and ears. You know, he's gonna have been bigger than some of those people from the classics that he adapted. In 50 years' time, more people will have read a Terence Dicks in that year than a Charles Dickens. And I think he'd like that.
So that is the late, great Terence Dicks. Hope you've enjoyed our memories of the grandfather of Doctor Who, however vague they might have got at some point, and shows your memories of Terence Dicks and his great contribution to Doctor Who and wider television, if you like, in general, on Facebook, on Twitter, or on the website. We'll be back next week. Until then, it's goodbye.
This is a Beyond Cast Cerberus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCastCerberus.com.